All right. Good morning. Okay. All right. It's good to be in chapel with you today. Finish this statement for me. My identity is in Jesus Christ. Yes, absolutely. Our identity is in Jesus. And if that is true, and I do believe that is true, then we should pay attention when Jesus proclaims identity statements over his followers, which I think he does in our text on the Sermon on the Mount. So if you could turn there with me, Sammy read part of that this morning. It's Matthew chapter 5, starting at verse 13. You are the salt of the earth. But if the salt loses its saltiness, how can it be made salty again? It's no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and trampled underfoot. You're the light of the world. A town built on a hill can't be hidden. Neither do people light a lamp and put it under a bowl. Instead, they put it on its stand, and it gives light to everyone in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others that they may see your good deeds and glorify your Father in heaven. It's a good text, isn't it? Great metaphors that are in there, salt and light, pretty straightforward. There was a student that I had in my youth group when I was a youth pastor up in the Portland, Oregon area that I think demonstrated this text. There's going to be a picture of three boys that are up here. This boy over here, his name is Sean. Sean's family wasn't a Christian, weren't Christians. They started showing up to our youth group because he lived across the street from the church, loved it there, excellent guitar player, and started leading worship with our worship team, and just did good work with that. He was part of the drama club at school where he met this boy in the middle named Aaron. Aaron, like I said, part of the drama club, not the greatest of students at school. He struggled a little bit at school, but his family, they weren't Christians. Sean invited him to show up to youth group one day. Aaron did and just fell in love with it and just kept coming back and coming back and coming back and had a great time in our group. Through that time, Aaron and Sean kept hanging out together. Sean kept sharing with him, and there were only two points while Aaron was in our youth group that I met Aaron's mom, okay? The first was at his baptism. Now, Sean was going to baptize Aaron when he decided to surrender his life to Jesus, and it was the most unholy, holy moment that I've ever been a part of. These two were just knuckleheads a lot of times in group, and we had, like, it was standard baptistry. You go backstage and everything. My wife, Lisa, would take pictures of youth group students when they were getting baptized, and Darla, Aaron's mom, showed up, cigarette in hand, not dressed appropriately for church or anywhere else, for that matter. I'm not putting her down for that. Darla is a dear, dear friend, but she was just rough around the edges, but so proud of her baby boy getting baptized at that point. And so Lisa brought Darla backstage. The boys are changing, and they put on, you know, swim trunks and a dark t-shirt. And then for whatever reason in our church, we had these white robes that they would put on over, you know, with the baptism. When they get wet, you could see through them, hence the clothes underneath there. Aaron knew this and intentionally was in his birthday suit underneath this white robe on purpose. You know, like he knew what he was doing. Now, audience couldn't see any of this, but Darla and Lisa could see everything. And when he got down in that water and Lisa's holding the camera, she goes, I can't take a picture of this. I'll get arrested if I take a picture of this. Like, this is wrong. But then Darla's there, and she's like, my baby boy is getting baptized. She's like, take a picture. She's like, and there is a picture somewhere in our house in a closet of Aaron's cheeks just clinging to this white robe that Lisa snapped. And like I said, it was the most holy, unholy baptism I have ever witnessed. The second time I met Darla's mom is when we were getting ready for a mission trip. We drove through Oregon and California, went down into Mexico, built houses, led worship at churches and stuff. Like, we just did a lot of things down in Mexico. And Aaron's going for the first time with us, super excited. And he brings all of his stuff, and he's checking in and getting medication set. Like, he just didn't have his medication with him. He didn't have a bunch of the things that were on the packing list. He just threw some clothes in a bag and like, let's go. Like, that's just the way he operated. And his mom was livid about it, to where she started throwing out four-letter words, cussing him out. Like, it just, in front of me, in front of other students, he was embarrassed and argued with his mom just a little bit there, and just completely embarrassed. And he gets on the bus, and then we get on the bus, and we take off, and I could see that shame in him. Like, just, oh, everybody else's moms and dad are so supportive, but mine not. And I sat down with him, put my arm around him, we chatted for a while, and it just kind of came out on that bus. His frustrations of being the only Christian in his family. Some of you can relate to this. The frustration of talking to his mom and her not wanting to go to church. Stepdad didn't want to have anything to do with church. And so we just talked about letting your light shine. I don't know if I used that phrase exactly, but it was in essence that. Like, Aaron, you are the only Christian in your family, and maybe God put you in this family so that you can let your light shine and help these people see Jesus clearly so that they could follow him faithfully. And he was determined after that trip. Like, that trip, it just sealed in his heart that that's what he was going to do. And so he came back and started inviting his mom and his stepdad to church. And you know what happened after that? I mean, he had vigor. He was excited, ready to go. Nothing. Started talking to his older sister. She was just a year older than him, Savannah, about coming to church. And they were in drama club together, and she wanted nothing to do with it. He was frustrated because, like, Savannah was just actually taking steps backwards, and her boyfriend, Zach, they were sleeping together. And then he just moved into the house, and Darla just let all of this kind of go on. And yet, he felt like he was always being criticized, yet Savannah's sleeping with her boyfriend in this house. Like, it just wasn't right, and he'd be frustrated about that. But he decided with Zach, the boyfriend, let's let my light shine with him, and started talking with him. He's a good guy. Like, he liked him and everything, but nothing. Absolutely nothing. He goes to his drama club, and he starts sharing about Jesus, and nobody wants to respond to that whatsoever. He was on the football team, special teams. He was the guy that held the ball while the kicker put the ball through. Yes. I was so ready for this sermon, except for that moment right there. How do I not understand the rules of football? Like, I don't know. Anyway, yeah, football team, special teams. He and a couple other guys started this Bible study that had one student show up 1 week, which he was excited about, and then the next week nobody showed up, and then it just fizzled out. Nothing. Let your light shine so that people can see your good deeds and praise your Father in heaven. And here he is letting his light shine quite earnestly and genuinely, and nobody is responding whatsoever until there was a Sunday morning where's that picture at? If you could put that back up there, please. This boy, Josh, shows up to church on a Sunday morning with Aaron. Aaron is beaming. He is excited. Josh, he's part of the drama club as well. Josh sits through the sermon and the worship and everything. Aaron brings him to me and introduces me to Josh. I had never met him before, and excited that he's there. And he's like, actually, Josh was asking me some questions, and we want to, like, get together. Can we get together today, and he could ask those questions of you? And I was like, well, not today. I had things that I had to do. We had family commitments, whatever was going on. And so it was summertime, and I said, no, but we can meet tomorrow. What are you boys doing tomorrow? And they're like, nothing. I was like, all right, come on down. We'll go to the ice cream shop that was down the street. We'll get some ice cream, and we'll just talk through some things. And okay, so it's a date. And Aaron was excited. When I think about people who were committed to being salt and light, Aaron's one of those people that stick out in my mind, but he would probably disagree with that. I think if we wrap some context around our text, you'll see some correlation between my youth group student there and his identity was followed by action. His identity was salt and light, and now he was backing that up with his actions. How about you? Let's nerd out on salt for a second, okay? Salt is huge in the Bible. Like, there is, I mean, not only is it good for preserving food and flavor in food, but sometimes salt was used as a sign of judgment because it actually destroyed vegetation. And so you could put a ton of salt in a field and it would just kill all the crops in that field. And so it was a sign of God's condemnation on a city or on a field there. Salt was also a payment for loyal service to your country. And so you've heard the phrase, like, he's worth his salt there. That meant, like, he's worth payment To eat the salt of the palace indicated that you were on the payroll of the king, and part of your payment would be with salt. It's the Latin word is where we get our word salary, salarium there. Salt was also a sign of the covenant with God. Not only did they make sacrifices of meat, but they would salt that meat before they would make the sacrifice, and they'd call it a sacrifice of salt or an offering of salt. And the imagery was that God was literally eating that sacrifice. They knew that he wasn't, but they would imagine that. And so you would, of course, put salt on that meal for flavor and for preservation, indicating that God's covenant will persevere and be preserved with his people, Israel. The most common use of salt was with hospitality. To put salt on the table was just a sign of friendship, and that our friendship would be long-lasting and it would be flavorful there. And so to not put out salt would be like if you and a bunch of students showed up in my house for dinner and I invited all of them in to sit around the table, but I put your plate out on the front porch and said, you could just eat out there. And technically, I think that's what Lot's wife did. I can't prove this in the text. But if you look at the Midrash, it's a Jewish commentary on the Old Testament. You look at the Midrash, you'll see that when the two angelic visitors show up at Lot's house to warn them about Sodom and Gomorrah and the impending doom that's going to come on that city, the Midrash says that Lot's wife did not put salt out with the bread. And it's an indication of, like, you're not welcome here. You're not welcome around this table. I'm happy with my life that I've created here in Sodom. And it was offensive. And so when those angelic visitors left and they led them up out of the city to escape the damage, the destruction, the total annihilation of that, and Lot's wife looked back, what did she turn into? Pillar of salt, some irony there, right? Because of her lack of hospitality with salt. Now, are any of these points what Jesus was talking about with the Sermon on the Mount? When you look at that text, you'll actually see the negative connotation that comes with it. He says, but if salt loses its saltiness, how can it be made salty again? It's no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and trampled by men. If the salt loses its saltiness, has that ever happened? I went into our cabinet and I found the oldest box of salt that I could find, sea salt. It has an expiration date. Actually, it's not an expiration date. It's best if used by, and it is May of 2011. I thought it was 2001 at first, which would not have surprised me at all, but it was May of 2011. Okay, and that means we had this for a long time before that. This salt has traveled to many estates. It has been in many, many houses, and it still sits in my cabinet today. And so my wife is going to be mad because she knew I took the salt. She's like, hey, I want that salt. And apparently she has not used it very much. Like, we use other salt. But if salt loses its saltiness, Paris, help me out. If you're willing. I know it's expired. But can you just go ahead and just, you get it. Okay. You love salt. Okay, great. Go ahead, taste it. Yeah.
It's good.
It's good. It's salty. I'm glad you're not salty, but yeah, like, it's salty, okay? So it hasn't lost its flavor. I don't know if salt does. As a matter of fact, there's many people that will argue about Jesus' statement because sodium chloride, you can't lose the chemical properties that come along with salt. Like, it just doesn't lose its saltiness. However, in Israel, most of their salt that they got, I think probably all of it, came from the Salt Sea, the Dead Sea. And in the salt pits of the Dead Sea, I think there's a picture of it up here, it would get mixed with other chemicals, and it would create these salt pits, and these salt fields that were there, and they would go, and they would try and separate out some of these chemicals, but you just couldn't do it all. And so those other chemicals would dissolve the properties in the salt, leaving it with a wanting flavor, quite often a bad aftertaste. It would actually have the opposite effect of providing good flavor for your food and preservation for your food, and so it would just be worthless. Like, you wouldn't want to put that on any of your meat or eat that with your bread, so the only thing that you could do is, once that those salt properties have dissolved by the other chemicals that are in there, is to throw it out. As a matter of fact, the term lose its saltiness, it literally reads, if the salt becomes foolish, If it would be foolish to put this on your bread or your meat because it's going to have the opposite effect. And so what is the point? A disciple of the kingdom who does not live like a disciple of the kingdom is worthless like tasteless salt. That our identity, we are the salt of the earth, our actions must match that. Otherwise, we're worthless and just thrown out. Jesus' point, identity leads to action. When people call to help, when we are a people who are called to help other people taste and see that the Lord is good, we're spiritual fervor and we're spiritual flavor in the communities that we're supposed to be living in. We're the salt of the earth. Now, light of the world, that's a little bit easier for us to wrap our mind around, right? Light of the world, it's a prominent metaphor in both the Old and New Testament. I mean, come on, it's the first words of God. Let there be light. The biblical depictions of light often talk about the removal of darkness. It's a metaphor for life, the soul, salvation, and happiness. You think about Old Testament theophanies often come with light in some way, whether it's fire or lightning or torches or lamps that are used. I have a first century, I have a replica of a first century lamp. It's just one of these little things that they would put in their houses, and it just helps us understand what Jesus is talking about here. Okay? The element of light is tied to the temple and Jerusalem, the Torah. David was called the lamp that could not be extinguished because his descendants would endure forever. There would always be a king on the throne all the way up until we get to the person of Jesus. The Messiah would be a light to the Gentiles. He would open the eyes of the blind. Like, we get light. And so when Jesus starts talking about how nobody would light a light and put it under a bowl or a bushel because that just doesn't make any sense whatsoever. Who does that? Nobody does. Oh my. Set off the fire alarm here. I'm going to leave that. That didn't work. I thought I was going to just extinguish it. Nope. Okay. Nobody would do that. When you light a light, you put it on a stand so that people can see. That just makes perfect sense. My dad is here, and we went camping recently. And as over the summer, we went camping just one night out by the lake. And the moment the light turned off, we were invaded with raccoons. Like an army of raccoons ready to eat everything in sight. It was like, but then when we get up or we turn on the light, like they would just scatter. It's like, where are they? Like we couldn't see them, but we could hear them all over the place. Like we wanted a light on the entire time because I thought the raccoons were gonna carry my dad's tent away. Like I thought I was gonna lose my father that day. Okay. Light illuminates darkness. Light illuminates evil around us. And Jesus is saying, when you light a light, you don't put it under a bowl. You put it up on a stand. You see the connectivity of the analogies, don't you? Salt and light. A disciple of the kingdom who does not live like a disciple of the kingdom is as worthless as tasteless salt or invisible light. They just don't work. Jesus' point, it's an identity statement. Our identity leads to action. You not only know the light of the world, you not only have the light of the world, but you are the light of the world. All of that is because of Christ's powerful transformation and work within you and I. The kingdom is lit up because you and I are in it and advancing it as we should. You are the salt of the earth and the light of the world. So let your salt be salty and let your light shine for men to see so that they can praise your Father in heaven. That's the point of the parable. And I'm not sure if Aaron believed that he was the light of the world because of the lack of response that he was getting from people. And so there we were at the ice cream shop, sitting there with Josh and sharing on that Monday. And Josh would ask these tough apologetic questions, really struggled with how can God be good if there's so much bad and evil in the world. He struggled with this idea of God not accepting homosexuality. And so he's asking these questions, and Aaron looks at me to answer them. And I'd just say, Aaron, go ahead. He's fumble around him. He was nervous. But every time he would just come back to his testimony of what God was doing in his life and how much better it was because God was in his life and that he had surrendered to Jesus. And I'd clean up some of his answers, and we had a good discussion. But when it was all said and done, I invited Josh to keep coming back to church and to show up to our youth group so that he could keep learning more. And he gave me that, like, yeah, maybe. And I could see it in his eyes that that wasn't going to happen. Aaron really wanted Josh to come to our MOVE conference that was going to be in a couple of months that summer. And so he invited him. He's like, oh, yeah, I'd love for you to go to MOVE, and I could even help pay for it. And there was no response whatsoever. And Aaron felt deflated and defeated once again. And arm around him again and said, hey, don't worry about it. And Josh went home, like, just keep working on him. People don't just surrender at the very first time. And I remembered him, like, you didn't surrender to Jesus your first time that you showed up here. And he was encouraged a little bit. And so he decided then after that, Josh went home. He was going to go over to Sean's house and watch a movie. And so he went over there and called his mom and said, hey, I want to stay at Sean's house and watch a movie. And Darla said, no, I want you home for dinner. And he goes, but mom, I'm going to watch this movie. And she goes, no, I just want you home for dinner. And so he gets on his bike. He's 17 years old, doesn't have his license yet. He gets on his bike, and he starts heading home with headphones in his ears. And as he's crossing a light rail train track, he just got smacked and hit by it. Just didn't see it or hear it. He's trapped under there for about 10 minutes or so before he just passed away. In 2003, that was. And I'm 20-something years old, not far from, you know, I just graduated from here a few years before that. I have no idea how to minister to my kids or Darla and Kevin and Savannah and Zach and anybody. Like, I have no idea what to do in tragedy. I remember heading over there, just weeping with that family. I mean, I'm processing it as well. Because I was just with that kid an hour or so before he'd passed. Unexpectedly. Processing all of this. Darla said to me that night after we prayed and I was getting ready to leave and I had to go over to Sean's house and tell him. And Darla said to me, you were one of the last people with him. I want to know everything that my son did today. And I didn't tell her right then and there, but later I got to talk about how what, the reason why your son was there is because he cared about his friend. And he wanted him to know about Jesus, and he wanted to answer his questions that were holding him back from Jesus. I got to share all of that with her. It took a while. It took a while for my guilt. What was I doing on Sunday that I couldn't meet with him? Darla said, I didn't really need him home for dinner. I just wanted our family together. Neither one of those motives are bad at all. Like, it wasn't our fault by any means, but it's just tough. It's tough to understand that and to wrap your mind around that. At the funeral that I had the burden and privilege to preach, I asked the people in the audience to stand up. To stand up if Aaron had ever shared Jesus with you, if he ever talked about his faith or things that were going on in church, that if he just was a positive, good witness for the gospel, if Aaron had ever shared that with you. And I watched the drama team stand up and some of the football players that were there, them stand up, some kids in our youth group that said, oh yeah, he was an encouragement to me and helped me with this. I watched Sean stand up, you know, like, yeah, he shared things with me. Like, I was the discipler, but I felt like I was being discipled by him. Josh standing up, Darla, Kevin, Zach, Savannah, right there on the front row, every single one of them standing up saying, yes, this kid made a difference. He didn't think he was salt or light. He was more concerned, like, he honestly was more concerned about the results than it was just his identity in Jesus and letting that lead his actions and just being faithful and letting God work out the results. And in the days to come, I got to baptize Darla, which was a fantastic moment, and Kevin, the stepdad, Savannah, and Zach, they got married. I got the privilege of doing their wedding service, and then they actually came here to Ozark to train. Sean came down to Ozark to train. He's led worship on this stage right here. Zach and Savannah went back to go help with the youth ministry in Oregon, the very youth ministry where they found the Lord after that time. Darla got involved with the church and is still to this day involved with that same church. Her and Kevin have led a support group for people who have unexpectedly lost their children just to help them and support them in their time of need, and that's been their ministry niche, and it's been a fantastic ride. And I asked her one time, because her and I just have a bond, and every time we see each other, we cry, and her there was one time I was up there in that area, and there's a group of us that grabbed lunch together, and I just asked her, I said, Darla, do you think that you would be in Jesus today if, and she didn't even let me finish the statement. Her words to me were, I want my son back every single day, but I will not give up Jesus to get him. I'll just have to wait till I go there to see him. I mean, that dedication. I wish I could tell you that every single student that we had the privilege of baptizing, because there was dozens of them through that time period after the funeral, and every student that committed his life to the Lord had stayed faithful. I can't tell you that exactly, but I can tell you that his family that he was most concerned about, they did stay faithful to the Lord. They stayed on it and are serving him to this day. It was just last summer that Savannah, his sister, and Darla, they were making a cross-country trip, and so they stopped here, and they shared food with us, and we had salt on the table and light in our hearts as we got to share around that table together and just catch up on life and talk about the good old days. My identity's in Christ, and in Christ, you are the light of the world. It can be quite intimidating when we say that here on this campus, because we don't always feel like it. I'm not light. I'm too dirty. I'm too sinful. I'm at OCC, but I'm not sure if I belong at OCC. I'm not sure if I'm going to make it here. I don't know if I'm going to make it in ministry or even in my faith. Sometimes my light feels really, really dim. Can we do something in here together? It might seem cheesy. It might seem hokey, but I think if we all participate, it won't feel that way. Do you guys have your phones? Take out your phones, just turn on your flashlight. Turn on your flashlight for me, and then just cover it up with your hand for a minute. Just leave it on for a little while. At convocation, we took verbal pledges together. I want to continue in the spirit of convocation by making visual pledges with the beginning of our school year, with the first week here. And so our new students that are in the room, our freshmen and our transfers that are here, at some point you determine that you need Ozark Christian College. Can I tell you that Ozark also needs you, that you're part of our DNA. You are who we are here. And I know for certain that some of you are homesick, some of you are doubting why you're here, you're not sure what God is doing, and maybe you're even ready to just give up. Would you let your light shine if you're ready to buckle up and not give up? Would you quite literally just let your light shine and just hold that up if you're a freshman or a transfer in here? And you're just going to keep on going, be a part of this family. It just so happens when I was working on this sermon last night or yesterday, one of the students came in who's a sophomore this year, and her first words out of her mouth whenever we were catching up with each other was, man, I was in a bad place at this time last year and I was ready to go home. And I'm so glad that I didn't, and the growth that I've seen in her is amazing. Let your light shine. Sophomores that are in here, freshmen and transfers, just gonna hold that light down for a minute. You have another year under your belt, sophomores. It's not your freshman year anymore. It's easy to use the wisdom that you've learned in foolish ways. We can be argumentative sometimes. Senseless debates, an attitude that is salty rather than being salt. It's easy to grow cynical at this place and with those that are around you. Would you let your light shine if you could commit to an intentional, positive, and helpful, joyful attitude on this campus? Would you quite literally let your light shine right now, sophomores? Oh, good. Good, good. Juniors, you know how to play the games with your absences and with your late work and with your reading confessionals and with your cutting of corners. Classes are just harder now. And most often in life, the hard thing and the right thing are the exact same thing. Will you let your light shine if you will give your full embrace to your ministry training for the sake of those that you intend to lead. You won't cut corners with those that you intend to lead out in ministry. And so don't cut corners in your ministry training here. Juniors, would you let your light shine? Seniors, you either have 1 foot out the door and 1 foot at OCC, or you soon will have 1 foot out and 1 foot in. You came here in faith to train for ministry. Don't forsake that calling that you had. Let your light shine by making faith-based decisions, not fear-based decisions, in your next steps of life. Sometimes we're just, you know, maybe you, when you came here, you unattached your umbilical cord from your home church or your parents, and then you attached it right here at OCC, and now you're about to detach it again and graduate, and you're looking for some other place to attach it where it's safe and comfortable. And ministry is not always safe and comfortable. The church needs you, seniors, so let your light shine. If you'll make faith-based decisions upon graduation and not fear-based decisions. Where are you at, seniors? There you are. Come on, faculty and staff that are here, I bet you your phones aren't even on, because I know if I was sitting out there, mine wouldn't be on. Look around. Well, okay, don't look around. Think about the students that are in your class and that show up in your offices and that you see on campus and in our life groups and mentor groups. As you think about the students that you know that are in this room, from our freshmen all the way to those that are going to be graduating, and you've seen growth and transformation in so many of them, let your light shine if you're committed to walking with them through this season of life. Make that visual commitment so that they know that they're not alone. Oh, they're all in the back. There they are, a few up in the balcony. Students, as you see those lights that are around you, we are here for you to help you through these next steps of college and into your next steps of ministry. For all of us, just within our community, if your Christian service has just been a form that you fill out rather than a lifestyle that you embrace, but this year, let your light shine if you will faithfully serve our churches and our community rather than expecting others to serve you. Let your light shine if that's you. Let's go. Let your light shine if you're tired of anxiety's crippling grip. And instead of self-diagnosing with self-taught solutions that don't work, will you talk to somebody that can actually help you take action steps? If that's you, let your light shine. Let your light shine if you will be the best encourager rather than a draining discouragement in the dorms, in your classes, in the cafeteria, with the faculty and staff, and with your friends. Let your light shine. Maybe you're in here and you feel like an outsider, and maybe that's because of a disability, or maybe that's because of your ethnicity, or you're just not from around here. You don't get this Ozark culture quite yet. Don't shrink back. Let your light shine, because you add flavor and culture and light that helps the rest of us see the world through your eyes so that we can reach more people for Jesus. Let your light shine. Maybe you have no heritage of faith in your family and you're the first generation of Jesus followers. Let your light shine, so that your family and your friends back home can see the illuminated face of Jesus through you. Maybe you have a long history of family in the faith. Let your light shine if you're committed to honoring their legacy in humility and in thankfulness. Maybe you have friends that bring tears to your eyes because you know the darkness that they walk in and how much it is hurting them. Let your light shine so that they know you see them. You haven't forgotten them, and you've probably walked in their shoes before. Let your light shine to them. Maybe this summer you have been foolish, like worthless salt. There's been some activity that you've participated in that you're not proud of and that you don't want to think about. You just want to put it behind you, and I don't blame you. But you need to stop hiding. You need to shed some light on your sin with deep confession and repentance and refuse to allow your sin to silence the spirit that dwells within you. Your sin will not master you. Let your light shine and let some people help you with that. Maybe you never expected to be here training for ministry, but somebody saw something in you before you could see it in yourself. Make the most of this opportunity and let your light shine. You do not need to wait around for my prompts to let your light shine. God is good, and God has good plans for your identity as salt and light, and that identity will lead to action, and that action will lead to a reaction in people that God places in your life. They will see your good deeds and praise your Father in heaven. And so no matter if this is your last day on earth or you live for another 100 years, may the testimony of all who come in contact with you be that you let your light shine. Let's stand up and worship together.